the relevance to us immediately is that we all face a choice. John's purpose is to reveal the identity of Jesus and tie his identity into what it means to have life. Mm-hmm. And so we all face this choice about who is Jesus, and do we understand that he is the one who offers us the life that we long for, that it's not found in anyone else?
Welcome to The Weekly, a podcast brought to you by Calvary Bible Church. I'm your host, Jay Ewing. Thanks for tuning in. Like always, do me a huge favor and visit calvarybible.com. Click your campus and find out what's happening in your neck of the woods. Get connected and stay connected by visiting calvarybible.com. Today, we have the great pleasure of kicking off John 1, our Gospel of John series that will go till next Easter, with Perry Marshall, the Boulder campus pastor. Perry, welcome, my friend.
Thanks, Jay.
Good to see you. So good that title hasn't changed this last year, but it's gotten real recently.
It's real, Jay. It's very real, yeah.
Yeah, for those who don't know and don't attend the Boulder campus, how has your job shifted recently?
Yeah, in a number of ways. I came to Calvary as the director of adult ministries, similar to your role in Erie, you know, and it's wonderful. Looking over life groups, men's ministry, women's ministry, you know, here we have Sunday classes. And it was great for the first 6 years or so. And then recently made the change as Pastor Tom was changing his own role and stepped up to take on more responsibility over leading the staff in Boulder and then preaching consistently now.
Yeah.
We're a few weeks into that, this experiment of Perry preaching every week. So,
well, you're underselling yourself because you come highly trained in the art of preaching. Before your time at Calvary, many of us know this, but our new listeners won't, you sort of guided the Denver Seminary department in a preaching initiative. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, it was a really fun season of life. I got to work with the director, or the professor of homiletics there, Scott Winnig is his name, and we had a program that we were able to work with preachers in the local area, some even on the East Coast, and it was really fun to be able to be around some really great preachers, and then they were investing into other preachers, sometimes in their church, sometimes outside of their church in the local context, but it was a blast, and I learned so much through that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's a really cool initiative you were a part of that season. Yeah. And if you haven't listened to Perry Marshall preach, this is my ad to say, go listen to him. He's a great preacher, wonderfully gifted, knows the art of preaching really well. Now, for those who haven't studied preaching or haven't been in classes and read books in preaching, they might not notice the nuances in which you have that some of us others don't have as preachers. And I think it's just really important for people to realize, like, there is a real discipline and art to the mechanism of preaching the Word of God to the people of God. And you have it. And it's really fun to watch that gift be exposed and developed and deepened in this season.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
I wonder if you have me confused with somebody else.
Whatever, it's great, man. I love when you preach. I love when you preach. I remember the season that we were in COVID and we would preach actually in this room. Yes. And I remember how you did it. Not very many people know this, but you would hit record and then you would have a whiteboard behind the camera with your notes. Right?
I don't even remember that. I mean, that was so long ago. I think I've kind of blacked that out of my memory. Like, that was a season that I am thankful I'm no longer in. You know, I think we all are.
Yeah. Can you imagine preaching with a teleprompter like the politicians do?
No.
How interesting would it be with that scrolling two-shot thing?
Sometimes I want it, though.
Yeah, I bet you do. Where am I going next?
Yeah, exactly.
What is the phrase I worked on all week to craft that I totally forgot it?
Yep, that has happened every Sunday.
Yeah, that happens quite a bit. When you talk about, you know, those who don't have the opportunity or the calling to preach, who watch the preacher listen to preaching on Sunday, what would you hope they know that they probably don't know about that person?
About the process of being there?
The process and the person of the preacher.
Yeah. I don't want to pretend like there's a single experience that everybody has as a preacher, but in general, it takes a lot of work, time, energy to put into it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like, it can feel ridiculous at times when you're thinking, I did all of that for these 30 minutes. And then it's just like, it vaporizes at the end. You're wondering did that do anything? And then to get back and do the same process over and over week in and week out. It is a labor, it's a burden, but it's a such an amazing privilege to be able to deliver a message from God's word. Like, I find myself on Sunday mornings always feeling like, man, I wish I would have been able to give this even more of my time, regardless of how much I put in up till that point. But I see everybody in the room in the worship center, and I just think, man, this is amazing to be able to open up God's word. And hopefully it's like you're serving up a meal.
Yeah.
You know, that's totally. Like in the best weeks, that's what it's like.
Yeah.
So it is a glorious thing, but it requires some time.
Yeah. Some preparation.
Yeah.
I don't think people realize, like, they see you maybe on a Wednesday, right? And you're eating dinner with your family out and about. In the back of your mind somewhere, there is a thought going about your sermon. It's sometimes low grade fever type.
At 2 a.m. when I wake up momentarily, I'm like, oh Lord, help me.
Yeah. You're like thinking about outlines or illustrations or how to connect this, make it clear.
Yeah.
You write sentences after sentences down of like, oh man, that does not sound great.
Yeah.
That's got a little better. That is muddled.
Yeah.
It is a real process of you said the word labor, but it's sort of just that task of diligence over and over again. Yeah. And when you see great preachers, right?
Yeah.
They have a spiritual gift. There's a spiritual gift in preaching.
Yep. Absolutely.
They have worked really hard.
Yeah.
To
those develop. Things are not a contradiction.
Yeah.
Having a gift in an area and working hard in that gifted area of giftedness, those are totally synonymous. And I think that a lot of people have that experience, whether your gift is serving, evangelism, whatever it might be. Just because you have a gift doesn't mean that it's just easy for you. Yeah.
That's a really good word, Perry. I really like how you connected to that. Okay, let's jump into the Gospel of John. We are here, finally.
Yes.
It felt like we had talked about this for almost a year. It really feels like that.
Yeah,
we've talked about it for a long time. Mm-hmm. And sort of the planning of where Calvary would be this fall.
Yeah.
And we're finally here at John 1. And maybe outside of Genesis 1, might be the greatest opening of any of the letters that we read in the Bible.
It's amazing.
Right.
Yeah.
Explain to the listener why I would say something like that about John 1.
Well, I mean, even though it's, you know, we're doing this on a Thursday, so it's been a few days since Sunday. Still, my experience last week of just going through the prologue, those first 18 verses, was amazing. And the thing that just kept coming through my mind over and over again was that, like, this is not something you read one time and move on from. It is so dense. And the more time you spend in it, the more you start to see how dense it is.
Right.
And it's just loaded full of, you know, really complicated in some cases, ideas and concepts, but it doesn't need to be. It also can be really simple in terms of what the core message that it's communicating. But it's a highly designed, structured, almost like work of art, really. It's a beautiful, beautiful passage.
Yeah, that's a really good work of art. I think as a life of a believer, there should be a season in life where you memorize John 1 through 18.
Mm.
Because it's something that will continue to show value over and over again as you deposit that in your heart. Mm.
Yeah, it's worth meditating on over again. Yeah.
It is worth meditating on. Yeah, and it's the opening prologue of the fourth gospel. There's four gospels. There are the historical accounts, eyewitness accounts of Jesus' life. They're reliable. They're historical, like I said. And John does something unique than the other three. Why is that?
Yeah, I don't know that I can say definitively why he's doing it, but that's been noted by people for centuries, you know, probably since they were written in the first century. That John has a different angle that he's taking on Jesus's life and ministry. And it's possible that John knew about Matthew, Mark, Luke, or maybe one or two of them.
Mm-hmm.
But those three together are known as the synoptics, and they're very similar, even though they're distinct too.
Yeah, they're very distinct.
They are more alike in comparison to John, and John is doing something very unique. And it's just, it's very theological on one hand, like the way he dives in this prologue. But on the other hand, too, as you read through it, which of course we're going to do, you see all of these details that only like an eyewitness would know and that John cares about because he's trying to be accurate. You know, like you see a lot of locations, you see a lot of names of little specific details that you may not expect to see if you're taking a really high level view. So he's like doing both of those at once, where he's able to give you a big sweeping perspective like he does in the prologue, but also then he drills down into little details like this coming week in chapter one, where he talks about specific locations where like ministry is taking place. So it's cool.
Yeah. I think, you know, as I've wrestled with how John wrote the gospel, it seems like he has one advantage that the other three don't, and that is age. He is older. He has seen sort of the development of the New Testament church.
Yeah.
He's lived a lot of life within the church community. In fact, he has been moved outside of Jerusalem to Ephesus, to now where he writes Patmos, when in exile. Like, there's a lot of wisdom that you would expect someone to have who's had a longer time to chew on the narratives of the first three gospels.
Right. Right.
And I assume that, and you said maybe he's read one or two. For me, it makes sense for me to, even though I can't prove it, that he probably did read all three.
Yeah.
Or knew of some rendition of all three in some way.
Yeah, I think it's very likely.
Yeah. And so John is in his older age, dwindling days of his life, right?
Yeah.
Maybe in the reality of being exiled for Patmos is writing.
Yeah.
Which is beautiful.
It is.
I mean, someone who writes a narrative in their 40s and someone who writes a narrative in their 90s is going to be different.
Totally. Yeah. I think it's a really valid point. And John is definitely, for a variety of reasons, taking a different angle on it. And it's you know, he's writing it for people in his day.
Right.
This is what he wants them to take away from Jesus' ministry, many of whom were not eyewitnesses,
right?
You know, like he was. So he wants to pass along a message that's very deliberate about what would be most encouraging, most helpful, most relevant to them.
Yeah, it's really cool. All right, so we open the word in John 1 with this idea of word.
Yeah.
He says, in the beginning was the word.
Yeah.
I mean, we could probably spend another hour talking about just that phrase.
I'd probably have to make stuff up if I was going to go a full hour.
No way.
I don't know if I could talk
in the beginning. when he says in the beginning, what are you supposed to think?
Yeah, Genesis 1:1.
Yeah, why is that so important for John to open it up that way?
Yeah, he's rolling back the clock, man. He's going all the way back to the as far as you could go, and even before then, because we're talking about eternity past.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's making the statement, which again, if you're thinking about in comparison to Matthew, Mark, and Luke, you get these genealogies in Matthew and Luke going back to Abraham, going back to Adam, which is going, you know, back quite a ways.
Yeah, it's dialing
it
back.
You're getting the start of Jesus's ministry.
Right.
But John is going back even deeper because he wants to present the fact that, hey, this is the pre-existent, you know, Son of God who we're talking about here.
Yeah.
He was uncreated, you know, and then the next phrase is just add depth and layers to that all. So, yeah, it's amazing.
It is amazing. And it really is a highlight of, like, you You should read your Old Testament. We say that a lot on the weekly. Yeah. We say that a lot at Calvary.
Yeah.
Because we love our scriptures.
Yeah.
And it's important for you to have a really good, robust understanding eventually through years of reading of what John is doing there in the beginning.
Yeah. I mean, he clearly wants readers to have Genesis 1 on their brain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you notice something there in the beginning was the word.
Yeah.
Now, that in English is actually capitalized, and the Greek, that is what Greek word? Logos. No,
I'm just kidding. It's all logos
and or logos, depending on if you're from Texas or not.
Right. Yeah, that's a word that also. I mean, it's like you could study that word for hours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You really could.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about actually this word over the years, when I've preached and you've preached, of how to define this word.
Yeah.
How best to define the word logos.
It's there's a lot.
Okay.
So like you have a couple of different tracks you can go down. You have, first of all, the Greek philosophy track.
Mm-hmm.
And even within that, there are multiple different variations. You're talking about people who live like Greek philosophers who go all the way back to like 500 BC. Mm-hmm. We're talking about this term. You have a whole subgroup called the Stoics who were talking about this term. Sometimes people include another group that came later, maybe too late to actually be on John's mind, but the Gnostics. But anyways, he has all of these different groups in mind. And then you have kind of the Jewish historical camp too. And so the discussion among people who have time to discuss these things, you know, is like, well, which one is it? And it could be that John has one specific group in mind. It's possible he has all of them in mind, mm-hmm. and just knows that, hey, this actually works in these different contexts, even though it means different things to different people. This all is bringing out some aspect of the one I want to introduce right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's amazing.
It's unique, too, in our English Bibles, because in the Old Testament, when Lord is used, there's a way in which it's used that it's capital L.
Yeah.
And that's to remind the readers that it is the word in Hebrew of Yahweh.
Yeah, right.
And here in the New Testament, they capitalize word with the capital W.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's pretty clear we're referring, you know, in context, you're referring to this figure who then becomes clear that this is Jesus later on in the prologue. And it does have the article before it, the word the, right mm-hmm. before it too. So it's like talking about the word. It's not mm-hmm. just a word, but mm-hmm. it's the word. So I think just the context of in which it's written, it becomes clear that we're talking about the Son of God here, second person of the Trinity. I don't think you pick that up reading it for the first time, only as far as we've talked about so far, you know. But if you keep reading, it becomes apparent.
So what I hear you saying and what we talked about before is that this is actually one of the names of the second person of the Trinity, the Word.
Yeah. It's what John's way of referring to him.
Yeah.
That way.
Which is unique because he's not identified as Jesus. He's mm-hmm. identified as the Word.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, this is I think I used the word pre-existent. I don't know what I meant by that earlier, but I meant to say pre-incarnate. Mm-hmm. You know, this is before the incarnation
mm-hmm.
of Jesus, you know, but it's, the second person of the Trinity, Son of God, who then becomes human in the form of Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
So,
It was something we shouldn't miss as we sort of dive into John 1.
Yeah.
Especially if we chew it up more and more often, what is going to take place within this. Yeah, and it says, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God.
Mm.
He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him, not anything made that was made.
Yeah.
In him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. I mean, this is master class language, theological idea. This is putting the word in the right place of how we're supposed to think about him as we read the gospel.
Yeah.
So out of your reflections of preaching this passage, what's striking to you this time around?
Yeah, I personally honed in. I mean, there's so much you could give your attention to in this. Every verse has significance to it. It's not like John is not wasting space here at all. I focused in kind of as a launching point into the other parts of the text on verse 14, and where John says the word became flesh and dwelt among us.
He tabernacled.
Yeah, he tabernacled among us, exactly. Yeah. And kind of used that as a launching off point to talk about different aspects of it. But that is where this all kind of is headed towards, where John is introducing this person as the Word, the eternal Word, who is with God, distinct from God, but yet is God, you know, and sets everything up, and then saying, hey, yeah, that's the God who became human, you know, and lived among us, tabernacled among us, as you said.
Yeah. So, as Eugene Peterson puts it, he moved into our neighborhood.
Yeah.
Which gives an expression of real earthiness of Jesus moving in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So as we think about this as Calvary, what are we supposed to pay attention to in the first chapter that will be connected to in the chapters beyond it? I'm sort of thinking about some of the word usage. So, you know, we got life. That's a hyperlink in the book of John.
Yeah.
Light is another one.
Yep.
Darkness.
Yep.
World is another word. Yep. Grace.
Yep.
Truth. Those are the hyperlinks that he'll define later, or they'll show up and you're like, as a reader, supposed to pay attention to something there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you could add to that from verses 11 and 12 there, the idea of receiving and believing.
Oh,
you know, those are really definitely going to come up too, especially chapter 3.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. but they're on their way, and yeah, all of those become these words that kind of get hyperlinked in later. Mm-hmm. So it's really cool.
So when we talk about hyperlink, there's really a reality of like these words are very unique in some ways to John, and in some ways he's using some words that the audience would know that are definitions of how God moved or who God was.
Right.
Yeah. From the Old Testament.
Yeah. Even what we've already talked about in the beginning. Well, what do you think about there? Darkness and light. You know, so he's tying all of these things together. Again, it's like the more you sit with this passage, you just see like, oh, no way. I've never even thought about that before.
Right.
Yeah. So it's dense, it's rich. And those words are key words that John is very deliberately using here.
Yeah. Yeah, I would encourage, if you're reading and studying the book of John with us and you're prepping ahead from week to week, I would make sure you just have a pen or a highlighter, and when you run into one of those words, that you underline it or highlight it as you prep and see how often those words are used throughout the whole gospel. Would be a unique study of the book.
Yeah.
So how are we supposed to think? We got this great prologue, this beautiful opening. What are the real world implications for us as the people of Calvary with this prologue?
Well, I think what it does is it sets us in the right perspective of who Jesus is. You know, that seems to be one of the major takeaways from the prologue here, that this is God himself, the one who created the universe, the one who sustains the universe, is the one who we call Jesus. Mm-hmm. And because of that, and again, going back like to verses 11 and 12, the relevance to us immediately is that we all face a choice. Mm-hmm. Who do we say he is? You know, and this, you didn't take us there, but John's purpose, which he says in chapter 20, is to reveal the identity of Jesus and tie his identity into what it means to have life.
Mm-hmm.
And so we all face this choice about who is Jesus, and do we understand that he is the one who offers us the life that we long for, that it's not found in anyone else? And, you know, as a church, that's immediately relevant to us because it's relevant to everyone. But specifically as a church, it helps us reset and refocus and remember who Jesus is, and that he is the one who the world is actually longing for, because we all long for the kind of life that only he can give us.
Yeah, that's a good word, Perry. It's a good way to frame up this next season in the Gospel of John. As we think about how to study the book, preparing from Sunday to Sunday, how would you go about it? How would you encourage people, Boulder, people in Erie and Thornton, to sort of get ready for the gospel?
Yeah, I would read the rest of the chapter that's coming up for that week. So like, you know, leading up to this Sunday, I'd read the rest of chapter one, at least.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it also will help you if you read a few chapters at a time and just kind of keep that pattern up. And you could take 5 minutes out of your day and read through the chapter that we're in. And if you get through that 4 or 5 times during the week, it's just going to set you up well on Sunday to be able to track with what that sermon is actually out of.
Yeah.
So
that's a good word.
Yeah.
That's a good word. Hey, thanks so much for sitting down with us today on the weekly.
Thanks for inviting me.
So glad you're have the opportunity to preach through the Gospel of John, to lead the people of God, and looking forward to how we receive it and how we will believe what Jesus can do in our lives.
Absolutely. Good. So good.
All right, Calvary, thanks so much for tuning in. Like always, to get connected or stay connected, visit calvarybible.com, click your campus. So many great things happening this fall here at Calvary. We don't want you to miss out on it. As well as, there is a QR code out there for you to find the John Journals on the ESV side. Go to Amazon, Google that. It's a great resource for you to pick up so you can study the Gospel of John, take your notes, journey with us here at church. I want to leave you with this today. The ending of the section we just read from, John 1, verse 16. John concludes this little section with this: From his fullness we have all received grace upon grace. For the law was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God, the only God, who is at their Father's side. He, that's Jesus, has made him known. We look forward to this season where Christ is made known to us as we study the Gospel of John together in this wonderful community we call Calvary Bible Church. Be blessed. Have a great week. Know we love you and praying for you, and we will see you very soon.